Welcome to Herb W. Morgan's Slaying Bulls and Bears, a podcast about economics, markets, investing, politics, and profit. Every Monday, in less than 20 minutes, Wall Street portfolio manager Herb W. Morgan distills the complex and complicated into the simple and sensical. Here's Herb now.
Good morning, everyone. It's Tuesday, May 9th. This is Herb Morgan, Senior Managing Director and Chief Investment Officer, here with a weekly economic and market commentary. Thank you for giving me a couple of weeks off. We had a nice vacation, and we're back in town late on Monday the 8th, so I'm doing this one day after the day we normally do it. As a reminder, if there is any intra-week commentary, it'll be put up on either Twitter or LinkedIn or both. This presentation you're about to see and hear has been prepared by Cantor Fitzgerald Investment Advisors, LP, for use with investors and financial advisors, each of whom are expected to make their own investment decisions. Nothing contained in this presentation should be treated as investment advice. There are no recommendations for the purchase or sale of any securities. Well, we had a modestly negative week in equities last week. Not too bad. You can see the S&P 500 down about 0.75%. Mid-cap stocks down a little bit more. But international markets eked out gains last week. So that was nice to see. You can see that there. Bonds gave up a little. High yield gave up a little in sympathy with equities. But looking at the right-hand column on a year-to-date basis, if you didn't know we had a looming debt crisis, if you didn't know we were fighting off massive inflation, if you didn't know there were massive concerns about earnings, you'd look across and say, you know, so far so good. Here we are in early May, and we're having a reasonably good year for financial asset prices. It's one of the reasons I always tell people to check emotions when it comes to investing, because time invested tends to be a very, very good friend to investors. Let's take a look at the economic data from last week, starting with S&P Global's report on U.S. manufacturing. Their PMI for manufacturing rose and into positive territory. That was a bit of a surprise. The estimate, though, was 50.4, came in at 50.2, right in line. But after six consecutive months of decline in manufacturing output by this gauge, we returned to growth, albeit right there at the even line. 50 is the line of delineation between contraction and expansion. However, the ISM report on manufacturing said, not so fast, we are still in contraction. You can see 6 months of contraction in the ISM. It was at a 3-year low in April, rose up, but that's still contraction. It was better than expected. We did see an increase in new orders. Prices paid, unfortunately, rose, but employment picked up and went above the line of delineation there. From a services perspective, remember, manufacturing is about 15% of the economy. Services is about 85% of the U.S. economy. We went to 53.6, right in line with expectations. That's 1, 2, 3 consecutive months of expansion after, looks like 7 months of contraction in the services sector as measured by S&P Global. Institute for Supply Management, or ISM, only had 1 negative month in services about 5 months ago. April rose from 51.2 to 51.9, right in line. New orders rose, prices paid unfortunately rose. Employment there fell, but not by much. It was still in expansion. So absolute employment rose, just rose at a slower pace than before. We got data last week on construction spending for March, rose 0.3%. That was 3 times the rate that was expected, 0.1%. But you can still see the percentage change from a year ago, which is the right-hand scale, has been coming down. It's not negative. You can see it right there. It's above the zero line for the right-hand scale. The labor market is definitely cooling, or is it? So conflicting messages, conflicting headlines last week, and conflicting analysis by all equally smart and experienced commentators on this. So let's try to make heads and tails out of this. Job openings, the number of openings in the U.S. economy peaked about a year and a half ago at about 12 million. We are now down from 12 million to 9.6 million. So that's a pretty significant 2.4 million decrease. The rate of deceleration is significant. It sort of matches that rate of acceleration coming out of the pandemic. So it kind of makes sense. You go up in a straight line, you're going to come down a little bit there as well. Openings, the number of openings to unemployed is starting to come down, and that relieves a lot of the pressure in the labor market, the inflationary pressure. It's still a little elevated though. We're at 1.6 openings for every unemployed person versus 1.2 before the pandemic. So that's probably going to continue to come down. It still is, I would say it's still modestly inflationary, but nowhere near where we were, say, a year ago. Factory orders for the month of March rose 0.9%. The estimate was for 1.2%. Takeout transportation, it was down 0.7%. They were down 0.7%. That's the second consecutive month there. We had a surprise report on the upside for auto sales. April auto sales rose from 14.8 annualized to 15.9. That was about 800,000 above the consensus estimates. And you can see kind of where the 16 million plus is sort of equilibrium. So this is a surprise given the fact that, you know, I've been saying for a couple months, we're in a very mild recession, that the Fed rate hikes coupled with the now bank contraction has put us into a recession, but the Fed has ammunition. As soon as they see that the inflation rate comes down, they have ammunition to stimulate. So interesting to see that auto number was as good as it was. Weekly claims for unemployment continuing to rise, but just barely off that bottom, sort of bumped around for 200,000 for the better part of a year and a half, almost 2 years. Now we're up to 242,000. Continuing claims, though, still, you know, really low at 1.8 million. All of this is a positive. So positive by coming up, meaning less inflationary pressure in the labor market. Below 300,000 signals a still healthy labor market overall. Speaking of labor, we got the two major monthly reports for the month of April. First, ADP, automatic data processing, private company, different set of analysis than the Bureau of Labor Statistics. They say private payrolls grew at double the consensus estimates. They're expecting 150. We added 300,000, the biggest gain since July of last year. Goods producing jobs gained, service jobs all gained. And this was on top of a pretty healthy report in the month of March. So we've really made up now. You can see the big loss back from the pandemic. Really a long stream of positive job gains in the economy. Now, the next one, which was the Friday report, that's the Bureau of Labor Statistics, non-farm payrolls. They were looking for 185, but got 250. That was more than expected after a gain of 165 in March. But didn't we say last month that March had risen 236? That's a big downward revision. So from this perspective, if you notice that in the report, you would say that we're continuing to get this disinflationary pressure and that the labor market is reacting to the Fed's action and the higher rates. And now that we have significant tightening from the banking sector, we expect a lot of this inflationary pressure to continue to wane from the markets. Service sector jobs up 197,000, manufacturing essentially flatline, unemployment rate still down extremely low, 3.4%, which is certainly a good thing. Makes me believe this recession, if I'm right, if we're in it, will be very short-lived and very mild. Now we're well into earnings season. There were a lot of predictions for very significant negative earnings reports, misses, et cetera. Now keep in mind when we talk about inline versus positive versus negative, these things can be adjusted, right? You know, by the analysts right up until they're reported. So, and then analysts tend to react to the reports and the guidance for the further estimate of of earnings, but we've had about 424 names report. Only about 7% earnings surprise. That's not 7% number. That's 7% beat on earnings. 331 of 424 beat their estimates. That is a pretty good number. That's pretty healthy, and it's a little bit surprising. In terms of the negative, only 80 out of 424 have failed. And so what's happening here is this is what it all comes down to, is our stock's expensive. And, you know, there's a million ways to look at this, but at 18.9 times forward estimated earnings, the question becomes, well, I can get 4.5% or 5% risk-free in a treasury. Therefore, I'm not really getting an equity risk premium. Therefore, stocks are expensive. And further, I think earnings are going to decline. This is the bear argument right now, that if earnings are going to decline, then that PE is not really 18.9, it's 22 or 23, because earnings are going to come in lower. Therefore, stocks have quite a ways to go to the downside. It's a well thought out argument. However, what's been happening is as these companies report, beat, and guide, earnings estimates for the S&P 500 are somehow going higher. On February 24th, we bottomed with a forward 12-month estimate of $223. Today, May 9th, this morning, we're at a forward estimate of $227. Doesn't mean it can't turn and go lower still, but it also, there's not a lot of history of earnings going down significantly. We get drops like this. This one here, of course, was the pandemic, once in a lifetime situation. So you could very easily make a reasoned argument that, hey, we've been through the rate hikes. We've been through the supply chain disruptions associated with reopening after the pandemic. We've been through the inflationary situation related to energy prices. We've been through now the bank failures. We've been through the Fed rate hikes. And now could be, and by the way, the market's up quite a bit from the bottom. So let's take a look at some of that information. Let's start first with the Federal Open Market Committee, which last week hiked interest rates another 25 basis points. That's their Fed funds rate to 5.25, and signaled by language in the statement and in the press conference after, they're likely done for now. They also strongly signaled that they believe the market, meaning this implied overnight rate and number of hikes cuts data, they believe the market's wrong and that they're going to keep at this 5.25 number for a longer period of time. They reserve the right to hike or cut depending on what happens in the economy, as they always do. But this is the fastest, most aggressive rate hiking cycle in history. Of course, we're coming from zero, so you have to put in that perspective. But the market, this is the amalgamation of all of the players betting in the futures market on the direction of interest rates, believes that nothing will happen at the June 14th meeting. Okay, this 0.08 means nothing. But that as soon as July, two meetings from now, there'll be a cut, and we'll be at 5% Fed funds. We're at 5.25 target upper end right now. The effective rate, I think this morning, is like 5.09, 5.10. So right there where we are. And then more cuts all the way through to January. So if this market is correct, then stocks are cheap, because stocks are always valued against your risk-free alternative. Question, really, the thing is, we don't know which market is right. Will the Fed start cutting? Will the Fed do nothing, pause? Or will the Fed suddenly turn and hike because inflationary data has remained sticky? We don't know. But I don't think the inflationary data can do anything but, the inflation data can do anything but come down from here. We've already had the rate hikes from the Fed. We have year-over-year negative money supply growth, which we've never had in the history of measuring M2 year-over-year growth. And now with what I call the rolling banking crisis, with banks failing and constricting lending, yesterday we got the loan officer survey, that's the net percent of banks saying that they're tightening their lending standards for commercial and industrial loans. In other words, they are lending less money. If you lend less money, that money doesn't get spent. It is therefore disinflationary. And you can see that number reported yesterday up to 46%. Last time we had a spike like that, we were here. You can see we entered a recession. You can barely see the 2020 recession here as well. So that one cut was recession. You can see it back in 01 recession, and you can see it back in 1990 recession. So this is consistent with a recession, which by definition is disinflationary. So I think we are there. And the next thing that we're worried about, the Fed is worried about, we're all worried about, is the return to growth. Although, as we can all point out, the labor market continues to be quite robust. But the stock market continues to sort of grind higher. This is the S&P 500. We know about the peak back in late 21. And we now appear to have troughed right here in summer of 22. And despite all that's happened, massive rate hikes, bank failures, everything, earnings have kind of hung in there. And we've rallied. We've rallied about 16.5% during this wall of worry, right? The markets have climbed this wall of worry since last summer, gotten through some pretty difficult times. We're at 4,100 on the S&P. And if the rate hikes are over, inflation comes down, and we somehow return to growth. And now, by the way, we're arguing again about the debt ceiling, as we always do. And then we always come to an agreement right before everything gets really ugly. So there you go. That's what's happening this week. We had wholesale inventories yesterday. Small business optimism will come out this morning. The big numbers this week are CPI on Wednesday, PPI on Thursday, along with jobs claims, and then consumer sentiment on Friday. Don't forget, this is available subscription if you're looking at the slides, charts, and graphs. Otherwise, it's also available as a podcast via any smart device. Thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Slaying Bulls and Bears. If you'd like to download the slides for this week's podcast, go to www.efficient-portfolios.com and join our mailing list. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel, rate us online, and share with a friend if you found this helpful. See you next week.